Hi, this is Daniel Garber of the Movies for CulturalMining.com and CIUT 89.5 FM. Canada has about a fifth of the world's drinking water, with less than half of 1% of the world's population. So much water. Why then are there boil alerts in some communities where the water is considered unfit to drink? Why have these warnings continued over many, many years? And why are so many of these communities Indigenous? So asks a woman named Layla Statz, who travels across North America searching for these answers, even as she explores her own connection with water and her Indigenous heritage. On the way, she encounters activists like Autumn Pelletier and some of the most horrendous examples of ecological violations, contaminations, and desecrations in Wet'suwet'en, Grassy Narrows, and the Navajo Nation. Will these boil alerts ever cease? Boil Alert is also the name of a new documentary directed by Stevie Salas and James Burns. Stevie is a world-famous musician, called one of the 50 best guitarists of all time, and a producer of music, film, and TV shows, best known for the great documentary Rumble, The Indians Who Rocked the World, from 1 or 2 years ago. James is an award-winning director known for the Solitary Confinement Project, as well as his Vice TV shows, and whose films have opened at TIFF and South by Southwest. Boil Alert is having its world premiere at the Toronto International Film Festival on the 15th. And I'm very pleased to have here with me via Zoom, Stevie Salas in Austin, Texas, to tell us more about Boil Alert. Hi, Stevie.
Hi.
Let's just go right into, why is drinkable tap water so important?
I mean, you know, if you just can't have the right to have simple water that you can just drink without dying or getting sores all over your skin or getting diarrhea, I mean, this is, you know, should be something that it's just unthinkable, especially in a first world country. So, I mean, I can tell you, when I first learned about this issue, I was off in Fiji and I was in a village where these kids were all sick and missing school and everyone had diarrhea. Kids were dying. A lot of children die from waterborne issues. And I was in these villages and I thought to myself, why am I 3/4 of the way around the world doing this when I could be back home doing it? And I spoke to my friend at Sawyer Water, who was down there doing his water filtration programs and doing an amazing job at it, by the way. He goes, what are you talking about? And then he did the research and looked in Canada and North America and found over 1,100 communities that were on boil alerts. And this is when the whole thing just started. So, yeah, to not be able to have just simple, clean water that we all think we have here in Canada and in the United States is ridiculous.
And I just want to say to the listeners, we've just been joined by James Burns as well. So we have both Stevie and James here to talk about Boil Alert.
Very handsome James Burns at that.
No, thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
So Grassy Narrows is a notorious example of corporate greed and negligence and how it affected many generations of the people in Grassy Narrows. So James, what happened there?
In Grassy Narrows, we really wanted to explore one of the largest environmental disasters in Canada, where over 10 tons of mercury were dumped into the English Wabigoon River. And over 90% of the people in Grassy Narrows experienced symptoms of mercury poisoning. How do you dig into that? When you start to look at what's happened there, you start to see a lot of the social issues that come out of that. You know, while we were at Grassy, we interviewed a young woman who talked to us about what the youth were experiencing from the poisoning. And she talked a lot about, drinking and suicide, essentially. But that now the youth were finding ways to kind of heal themselves and connect with the culture more. And that's what the scene with the powwow is all about. You know, and unfortunately, about four weeks ago, Nora, who we did interview, took her own life.
Wow.
So this is a serious issue. That
hold on, James. You know what's crazy about it is you'll see in the film, she literally got to the point where she accepted the fact from growing up there and watching all her friends and people her whole life be sick and die, that she flat out came to the conclusion, as opposed to saying this isn't going to happen. She came to the conclusion where it just was like, I know my life is probably going to be cut short or shorter than it should be because of this issue. And it's gotten to the point where people just say, what can we do? This is like, they're actually accepting that. And that's just unheard of. You know, it's ridiculous. It's horrible.
There was a similar case in Japan called where something came up called Minamata's disease. And for years, they didn't know what it was. But again, it was a corporate dump of mercury into the water where they caught their fish. And the scary thing is it continues for generations. People still have the same problems they have in Grassy Narrows as their grandparents had.
Yeah,
that's correct. So it gets worse because the mercury is passed down to the child, and the child has more mercury than in their system than the parents did as a fetus. You know, so therefore it affects them even more, and it's passed down. You know, so it's a generational issue.
So let's talk about Wet'suwet'en, British Columbia, where there were protests, among other things, for running a gas pipeline through unceded territory. Why were these protests important?
And these protests were important, you know, mainly in part because Layla had a connection to Wet'suwet'en. And her brother, Logan, was there before we had went. So, you know, after she had gone on this journey and she had seen all the water issues in the territories that we'd been to, she felt like she could no longer stand by as an observer. And when she heard back from her brother and some of the hereditary chiefs that were in Wet'suwet'en, you know, they you know, all came to the conclusion that she felt like she needed to go there, you know, and from what I understand, and Stevie, you know, and Dan, correct me if I'm wrong, but, you know, it felt like this was like Canada's standing rock. You know, this was a moment to really come in and take a stand and stop these companies, Coastal Gasing, from coming in and ruining their water. So that's why it was really important.
You know,
it was a pivotal arc in the film.
And James, what was also really important about it was the fact that whether it was massively put together the way Standing Rock was really organized and huge, this was still small. But the point is, if we don't create the awareness, then that nobody knows. It becomes just another unknown thing, right? And so we feel it was a lack of awareness is probably one of the most dangerous things out there for Indigenous people. It's not, you know, what you think it is. So just people aren't aware of what's going on. And so being at Wet'suwet'en, that was important to create that awareness so people actually see what's really going on and not just hear about something far away.
It's also, for the film, a pivotal moment. It's the arc, you know, of the film and Layla's journey and when she begins to take action.
The recent movie.
It's the boiling point, you could say.
I think we've all heard of the hit movie Oppenheimer, where it takes place in New Mexico, where Oppenheimer said, "Oh, look, it's an area with uranium, and there are no people." He basically said, "There's no people." So they're building an atomic bomb out of the uranium that comes from New Mexico, but they're are people, and there were people there, specifically the Navajo Nation. So can you talk about the disaster that happened there and how it affected the people, Stevie.
Yeah, you know, here's what's so ironic. It's like how the gods conspired to help them. All of a sudden, we're there, we're filming radioactive rocks and all this madness, and Oppenheimer comes out and is making, you know, will make $1 billion and create all this awareness about a guy who was a hero. And I'm not going to deny what he did was amazing, but nobody ever talks about what happened after the cleanup, all this. And in this scene in Oppenheimer, he actually, after he creates the atom bomb, he says, I want to close down Los Alamos. And they say, well, what are you going to do with it? And he goes, I want to give the land back to the Indians. You know, so, I mean, he was aware. It was the native communities were there. But later on, as it kept going, you know, now we're showing you that after, you know, there's a hero. Somebody did something amazing to save a gazillion people's lives. And then, you know, we kind of forget about it because it's on Indian land. And all these years later, you see the Navajo res we're at, and you see what's really going on in the aftermath because nobody bothered to clean things up properly. And if you have no voice, you know, if that would have happened in downtown Toronto, it wouldn't, you know, that couldn't happen in a real city. But on a reservation, you can get away with stuff like that. And then again, unless you create the awareness, people have no idea what's going on.
Funny, before I saw this film, I was expecting talking heads, news footage, historical photos, but the film is actually totally different. It's filled with really beautiful scenery, this panorama scenery and lakes and rivers, and there's dance, and there's animation based on, I guess, watercolors, and there's music, and there's a powwow, and through it all, there's this introspective, almost poetic thoughts of Layla narrating it. So what inspired you to make the film this way rather than a conventional documentary?
Can I say something, James, about that real quick? James and I talked a lot about the contrast because we're going, you know, at Six Nations, we were going up and spending our own money going into Indian country and putting soil water filtration systems in places, no longer waiting for the government to do it. We were just going up on reservations and paying for it and doing it ourselves. And one of the things that I talked to James a lot about was you go to a place that might be one of the most beautiful places you've ever seen in your life. And you look at this lake and this water and these trees. Without knowing it, if you go and drink that water or dive in it, you might die. You know, so that contrast we talked about a lot, what James is brilliant at, is showing this beauty and understanding that there's just death in it. And the contrast of those two things is so powerful.
It is a dark topic, but what I liked about the documentary, it wasn't a depressing documentary. It was almost like a joyful documentary. James? What are your feelings about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think I can answer that question in two parts. Like the hybridity in which we created with the documentary was really important because you had the two storylines running in parallel, both Layla's journey and the story of what's happening with the water and the communities alongside of it. Creating scripted narrative vignettes that speak to Layla and her journey were really important. You know, it's coming from a deeper place in the subconscious and in the soul. You know, the animated elements, I think, are also important in helping hammer home some of the ideas that we have that might not stick otherwise, like you said, with a talking head type of documentary. You know, really, that's something that, you know, and also kind of like stemmed from the water walker, like reading The Little Prince and seeing like a young person who goes to the adults and stands up and says that they shouldn't be dirtying up the water. That The Water Walker is a film that we did. So, it was, you know, creating this hybrid is I'm on a bit of a tangent here about another movie, but essentially the hybrid nature of the doc, I think, ties art and the human element together nicely, and it's important, I think, to get the message across.
Yeah, we, you know, the whole idea that we like to do, James and I get into this, and it's been a concept of what I've been all about, and as an Indigenous person, You know, I worked in the mainstream my whole life with gigantic mainstream artists, you know, from Mick Jagger to whoever. And I've learned that you can come to somebody and you can complain about what's going on, and everybody's like, okay, I get it. It's awful. I don't know what I can do about it. It's overwhelming. Or you can do something and trick them into learning something, and rumble trick people into learning something that they didn't know existed. And this film, if you create beauty and contrast in these characters, you feel for the character and the dual story of Layla as an indigenous woman, as an indigenous person lost and searching for identity. She's representing indigenous people. You follow that in, and at the end of it, you go away going, I learned something about something I knew nothing about, and I don't feel guilty and horrible about it, but I feel like I need to do something. And that's the trick. So if you can show them the beauty of the human and the land, and then they come up with the conclusion that this is screwed up and we need to fix this.
Great words for a great movie. Thanks so much for talking with me.
Awesome.
Thank you. Yeah.
Stevie Salas and James Byrne's new documentary Boil Alert is having its world premiere at TIFF on September 15th. Don't miss it. This is Daniel Garber the Movies each Saturday morning on CIUT 89.5 FM and on my website, culturalmining.com.